Hi, I'm Shauna Meyerson with the Yoga of War podcast. Here today, even though you can't see him right now, oh, there he is. Here today with returned guest, IDF Lieutenant Colonel in the Reserves, Ihab Schleyer. Did I say it right this time?
Now it's my real name.
Ah, perfect. Straight from church and looking, I should have worn my formal wear, looking very nice over there. Everybody who's watching, thank you in advance for supporting the show so I could continue to bring you such amazing and esteemed guests. Details are pinned in the comments below. Israel and the Jewish people have been absolutely blessed with some incredible vocal and powerful Christian Zionist allies who have proven to be absolute heroes since the Hamas terrorist massacre on 10/7/23. While so many people have lost sight of their Judeo-Christian values of condemning terror, defending justice, and loving one's neighbors, others have heard the call loud and clear. Influencers like musician John Androsic from Five for Fighting, news commentator Aaron Molan, ambassador Mike Huckabee, and TV host Dr. Phil, to name just a few, reach millions of people a day with their message of Christian unity with the Jews and the Jewish state. And then there's Ihab Schleyer, a lieutenant colonel in the IDF reserves who literally puts his life on the line to defend Am Yisrael. A native Israeli, as a Christian, Ihab was never required to serve in the IDF, but his love of country not only compelled him to serve, but to rise up to become the highest ranking Christian officer in the entire Israel Defense Forces. Now that is next level Christian Zionism. Ihab, sorry that we're having some troubles with the Wi-Fi. Hopefully, he'll pop back on. Ihab Schleyer is a lieutenant colonel in the Israel Defense Forces Reserves and one of the most prominent voices for Christian Aramean identity in Israel. Over a military career spanning 24 years, he served in both combat and security roles, becoming, as I mentioned, the highest ranking Christian officer in the IDF. In 2012, he founded and continues to lead the Forum for Christian Enlistment, also known as the Christian Voice or Voice of Israeli Christian Eagles. To promote the enlistment of Israeli Christians into the IDF and to advocate for greater Christian representation in national and local institutions. Raised and still living in Upper Nazareth, Schleyer belongs to the Aramean Syriac, did I say that right, Syriac? Christian community, preserving the use of the Aramaic language and cultural traditions alongside his public and military service. Ihab, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast, and thank you so much for your service. I'm going to hope that we have a better connection result than we did last time we spoke.
That's what I hope so.
Let's hope the Wi-Fi gods shine down on us today. So to start off, my first question today is, you are both a very, very proud Christian and a proud Israeli. Can you talk to us about the roots of Christian Zionism and how central is it to your identity?
Thanks for everybody here with us who's seeing this show. You know, I'm so glad that the West and the U.S. are looking for the Christian now to hear our voice. Because when you're asking me what the meaning of Christian Zionism, or what about us as a Christian who serve in the army, believe in Israel, believe in the Jewish people. So when I read the Bible, and the Bible said that God bless the Jews, God bless us. So when you ask myself what I am, what my religion is, first of all, I'm telling you, I'm a Christian Jewish. Okay, when you say I'm Christian Jewish, why is that? Because the Christianity started in the 100th century. So that meaning that in the beginning, Jesus, he didn't say that he started a new religious. He said that he will continue the Testament. He will continue the Tanakh. So I believe that we are, as a Christians, we need to be together with the Jewish to protect this land. It's the holy land. So in my dream or my vision, I want all the Christian here and all the dimension. I don't care if you are Orthodox, Catholic, Baptist. I don't care. If you are Christian, you need to be united with the Jewish people to defend our land. So if there's not Israel, we won't be here. I said it in the last broadcast. Also, we are, as a Christian, won't be here. Look around us, what happened to the Christian communities. The Christian in the Middle East are disappearing from there. And the only place or the only land that the Christians still living here in free, religious freedom, praying, working, it's only in Israel. If there's any place that you can say to me that in the Middle East that the Christian live better than Israel, just tell me, I will be there. Just believe me, this is the place. Jesus was here. He came here to Israel. He blessed the land. So we need together to pray for this land and to protect us from every enemy.
And it makes so much sense because everything that is Jewish is also Christian, right? Christian goes beyond Judaism. Judaism is, I know English is your second language. So if I say a word that doesn't make sense, even though your English is amazing, but Judaism is a subset of Christianity. So it makes sense that Christianity is inclusive. And that's why we talk so much about Judeo-Christian values, values that I believe are to an extent lost in today's day and age. But we'll talk about that more later. But thank you for that. Were the Aramaeans the first Christians? Where in the timeline of history, of Christian history, where do the Aramaean Christians fall in the Syriac, Aramaean specifically?
And that Jesus wasn't Aramaic. Yeah, he born in Judaism, in Bethlehem. But Jesus, he pray in Aramaic. You know, when I ask the priest, tell me, why Jesus, the Jewish a little bit, was against him, he say to me, because Jesus, he pray in the Beit Knesset in Aramaic language. So the Aramaic language, it was, you know, it's the people language. You cannot pray in Aramaic in the Knesset, in the Beit Knesset, or in the churches, let's say. But after that, there was a dimension in the Jewish. They start praying in Aramaic because they understand that the people don't understand Hebrew. You know, Hebrew at the beginning, it was the language of the pray. It's the language with God. This is what they say. So when you ask, you know, the Pope say to Netanyahu, to Benjamin Netanyahu, say to him, when Benjamin Netanyahu say to the Pope, Francisco, he say to him, Jesus spoke Hebrew. So the Pope say to him, no, Jesus spoke Aramaic and also Hebrew. So a language, it's the Bible, it was written in Aramaic language. And after that, you know, with the Greece and every language is here, and also the Arabic. So now we are living under, let's say, Arabic occupation. So we translate the Bible from the Aramaic to the Arabic, because the people, we want them to understand the prayer. We want them to understand the Bible, but it doesn't mean that we are Arabic. So first of all, we are Christian, with the name of the Jesus, and Aramaic, it was our ancient language for us. Well, still, for me, in all the dimension, for us, Jesus is our Christ, Jesus Christ, and we believe that we are together, we can be together, maybe. We can start praying in the Aramaic language in the future. I hope so, because it's a perfect, it's a beautiful language. I don't know if you hear somebody pray in Aramaic language. It's a beautiful language. Tieti malkutach, nehwa sabyanach, abun dishmayo. Dishmayo, it's like the word shamayim in Hebrew. Shamayim, it's heaven. So there's a lot of words in the Aramaic. It's look like in Hebrew. It's the same as Hebrew. And also there's a word, it's like Arabic language also.
and made a language that a lot of disparate groups could start communicating together with. Is this your day-to-day language, or it's something that you preserve in, say, church or special schools?
Is the bishop of the Syrianic Catholic. I was there in the church. They pray in Aramaic, in Bethlehem, and in Jerusalem. So there's a churches, what it's called Syrianic church, they pray in Aramaic. And also the Maronic, they pray, they pray in Arabic and also in Aramaic language. Now I was in the Orthodox church. My friend was married. So, I hear the priest, he pray in Arabic and in Greece also. It's a lot of mention here in Jerusalem, in Israel, a lot of languages, Aramaic, Arabic, Greece, Hebrew also they pray. So I hope there will be a Yelto, one language that united all the churches. I hope so.
What language in your community do you speak on a daily basis? Is it Hebrew? Is it Arabic? Is it Aramaic? What is your day-to-day language, not praying?
Hebrew language start being most language that we are talking in the days. But in our houses, we can speak a little bit Arabic. But meanwhile, if you're asking me, in 5 or 10 years from now, also the Christian will speak only Hebrew, and the Arabic language will disappear. I think so.
But is more a function of your religion or your nationality?
How we live in our life. I don't think there's a connection with this with the religious. But if you go back in the Bible, Jesus all the time there was a verse that he say about that Zionism. He pray for the for the wives and the and the girls. They say to them, "All your bread Zion." So in the Bible it's Ibn Zion. But when you ask me here, and our enemies around us, they prefer to say that they are Jewish and they are Zionism. So around us or the enemies, they're saying all the time, we are not against the Jewish, we are against the Zionism. So for me, if you're asking me what the meaning of Zionism, and if you ask a Jewish what the meaning of Zionism, they don't know. This is what I believe. But if you're asking me, all the time I say to the member of the Knesset, I ask them, do you believe in Zionism? Or you want to be sitting on your chair and do nothing, just get your money. So if you believe in Zionism, be with us. So now I believe that Zionism, the meaning of that, it's our way in believing and to be, to hang, to be in this land and protect our land. This is what I believe the word Zionism, and this is the way, the day life of our way. When you say Christian Zionism, it's not that we are being Jewish, okay? But you cannot say a Christian and Jewish or Muslim and Jewish, but you can say Muslim, Zionism, Muslim. So when you say Zionism, Muslim, he believe in Israel. He believe in Jerusalem, that is the capital of the Israel. This is our way that we believe in that. And if you're asking me if I'm calling myself a Zionism, I'm saying to you, yes, I am Zionism. And I believe in our land. I start reading the Bible, then I understand that there's a Zionism in the Bible as a religious. But now because I'm living here in Israel, so I believe this is my flag, as you see. It's an Israeli flag. It's on my car. And another thing, as you see, I have a Christian flag. So I'm asking everybody, do you think that Christian in the Middle East can hand or take this flag with a cross and go around the countries, in the Arab countries? No. Only in this flag, only in this place, in Israel, just in Israel, we can take this flag with us and we can take a cross with us with no fear. So if this is the meaning of Zionism, I will be the first Christian Zionism here in the land. And thank God for that.
You want to explain the flag?
When I joined to the army, or enlisted to the army by the year 2000, I saw the Muslims, they got their flag, the green flag, the Jewish, the Israeli flag, the Druze, they have their flag, the Cherkessim, they have their flag, the Bedouin, they have their flag. Only the Christian soldiers, they don't have any flag to use it. In the 2012, when I established the recruitment form, I wanted to use one flag. We didn't have any Christian flag. You know, all the dynamic, the dimension in the Christianity, there's a lot of flag. You know, the Catholic, they got their flag, the Orthodox, the Anglican. So what a flag I can use. So by the year 2020, still I was in the army. I took those colors and I say, I want to unite all the Christian dimension in one flag. So I will explain that. First of all, the merge of two colors, they have a meaning. Every line, they have a meaning. So I will start the first of the merge of the flag. The red one and the yellow is the Aramaic flag. When you Google Aramaic flag, you will see that there's a red one and an eagle in the yellow. So this first, it's talking about the Aramaic flag. It's also talking about the Byzantine Empire, because the Byzantine Empire, they have red and yellow also. The yellow and the white, it's the Vatican. It's the West dimension, what they say. And the white and the blue is the Orthodox. So as you see here, all the dimension in the left side. About the triangle here, if you write Christian flag, you will see that in Brooklyn in 1897, somebody was designing a flag. It's look rectangle with a cross inside it. So I took it and put triangle at the triangle, and it say this one is the holy triangle, and the cross inside, it's a cross at the red. It says the blood of Jesus. The blue one is the baptism, and all what you see, the white one, is the pure of the Christianity, the pure of Jesus. And here, as you see, it's Saint George. Saint George was a fighter, because I want to say for all the Christian, we are fighters, we are soldiers, we are the Christ of soldiers. So as you see here, it's all the dimension in one flag. And every colors alone of them, it says something. The red one is saying the blood of the Christian who died. The yellow is the restoration of the Christian. You know, in Easter, we got the eggs. We paint them with yellow. The white is the purity of our Christianity. And the blue is the baptism. And you can see it now. And also, the white with the blue is Israel flag. Yes, I created this flag. I designed it. And I took them to the Israeli government. And also to the bishops. They say for me, wow, it's a great flag. We now use it. I start using it in the army. So all the Christian soldiers, they're taking this flag and going, you know, in the army with using it. I didn't think that this flag will be, you know, in the civil spirit. So now I see that all the civilian taking this flag and using it in every domination and everything. In the day life, you can see Christian using this flag uniform, the army uniform. I have the patch here with the flag of Israel and our flag together.
Well done. It is so amazing. Thank you for sharing that. I'm just curious, would you say that like most Christians in Israel would consider themselves to be Zionists?
Too much democracy. It's bad. It's too bad for the minority. I hope that you understand what I'm saying. So when you give the Arabic too much democracy, now I'm here in Nazareth. So Nazareth, who's the majority, as you know? It's not the Christian anymore. It's the Christian here, it's only 22% Christian in Nazareth. So who control the area? The majority are the Arabs, what is called the Muslims. So when they are control here, the area, so the Christian all the time, they're afraid to say their word. So the Christian, it's preferred to say that we are here as it's look like the UN, that the Christian here, we sit alone. We don't have any problem. We won't want to say that we are Zionism. We don't want that we are supporting Israel too much. Please just, we won't sit here because we wouldn't want any problem. So why that? Because if you go to the police now and say to the police, please protect the Christian, what can the police say when you say to you that we are in democracy country? Everybody can say whatever they want to say. and the Christian here are afraid. The Christian, he said that we better immigrate from here or go to the cities where is a Jewish there. I hate it. I don't like it. I really want the Christian will be, let's say, go back to that in the year of 2000, the Christianity will hear majority, but I don't know. And you want to go to the West, and also the West, there's a majority of Arabs, Muslims, for all of those who immigrated from the Arab countries. So when you ask the Christian here, if they want to say that they are Zionism, they will say to you, no, we are not, because the country is still not supporting us. They are not giving us what we need to God. And I hope that we can talk about my five demands from the Israeli government to support the Christian to be part of the Israeli society, to be part of the Zionism in Israel. So I hope that we have a time to talk about our five demands from the Israeli government.
Obviously, I mean, not for everybody, but Israel has what's called a coalition government. For those who don't understand, it means that you don't vote for nobody votes for Netanyahu. You vote for a party. The party leader forms what's called a coalition of forces, and that becomes the coalition government. Now, a few years back, I think in 2019, perhaps, there was a very interesting coalition that formed literally just to defeat Netanyahu that included the Muslim Ram Party, which has some obvious conflicts of interest. So that was very interesting and short-lived. So because, as you said, I've made this argument as well, Israel is overly democratic. I mean, you have like 30 parties on the ticket, and somebody might get one vote and somebody might get 30 votes, and you cobble this together. Ihab, do the Christians have a party? Let's start that. Do the Christians have a party? So when there's elections, is there a Christian party that people can vote for?
If you want to be a member of the Knesset, you need to get 150,000 election or somebody who say that we need this person. So now a Christian here in Israel, it's maybe more or less 80,000. So as a Christian community, let's say we are going with a Christian party. I don't believe the Christian party will be part of the Knesset. I want to say for sure for you that maybe I want to be a member of the Knesset because I want to support the Christian here in the Israeli society. I hope so. I'm still waiting for the Jewish parties to say to me, Yab, come with us. But if not, maybe I will get a Christian party. But if I've got a Christian party, I don't think that I will be in the Knesset. That you will need to understand that. And the Christian party, I need to be with the, you know, with the biggest party like the Jewish party. We are together. We can be in the Knesset inside it.
Certainly, there are Jewish and maybe Druze. I don't know all the politics that would also be interested in joining a coalition that would allow you, if it were your party, to be able to be in Knesset. I know that you're very active in politics, and that you told me that you have been trying to procure basically an advisor role for you or for someone else to represent the Christian community towards the foreign ministry, correct?
First of all, I'm telling you, this is not my dream to be a member of the Knesset, because now I'm working in an electricity company. I am in charge of the cyber department in the electricity company. So I don't have any problem with working. You know, I can work alone and we can leave everything. I can leave the Christian community aside and keep working alone, and that's it. No, just because I want that the Christian community and see my children, I don't want them to feel afraid that they're now as the Christian community here in Israel. I want that the Christian community will be part of the Israeli society. But still, I'm telling you, you need to know that the Christians are not optimistic. They're saying that the Israeli government won't support with our five demands. I call them the five demands. We will talk about them, and you will understand, and all the viewers, will say, wow, Ahab, it's saying the truth. How come Christian will say that they want to be part of Israel? How come they will be saying that they want to be Zionism when the Israeli government has not given us the minimum of our demands? And I hope that I can talk about them now, because I want the viewer to understand why I'm saying that, and I'm so angry with that, because I want the Christian community to be part of Israel. But to be that, we need our by demand to be accomplished. First of all, let's talk about the first demand. As a Christian here in Israel, the Israeli government, they recognize us as Arabic. So what the meaning of Arabic? Arabic, it's also Muslims. So I'm not against Muslims, but let's say, why are you calling me Arabic? So what the meaning of Arabic? If everybody who speaks Arabic is an Arabic, so let's talk about that Israeli, the Israeli nationality will be 80% Arabic, because the Jewish who came from Iraq, from Jordan, from Syria, from Egypt, they speak Arabic better than me. The Druze are speaking Arabic. The Druze are speaking, the Bedouin are speaking Arabic. The Cherkessim are speaking Arabic. So why the Israeli government, they gave the Druze and the Bedouin and the Cherkessim to be as a unique community? And when you talk about them, they're saying they are Druze, they are Bedouin, they're Cherkessim. When you're talking about us as a Christian, they say that we are Arabs. So when the Jewish ask me, who are you? Or ask a young Christian, what are you? They say to me, I'm Arabic Christian. Why are you calling me Arabic Christian? I just want to be a Christian community. You know, when you go to US, everybody speak English. So they are England, from England. Let's go to the South of America. The South of America, they are speaking French, Spanish. So they are Spanish.
Right.
So I want that the Israeli government would take the piece of cake, which called Christianity, and say they are Christian community. This is first one.
Makes sense.
The second one, you know that my children, no, not my children, because my children is in a Jewish school. When I learn in the school was a Christian school. It's called, you know, it's when I say it, everybody was afraid when I say the word. It's SSS, not 2S, 3S. It's a Salvatorian Sister Schools. It's a German school in Nazareth. So what do you think that the Christian youth learning, or the student learning in history? You know what history we are learning in the schools? We are learning about the Arabic and the Muslim history. How they built the mosque, how the Prophet Muhammad started. Why I need to learn as a Christian about the Prophet Muhammad and the Muslims, and not learning about the, you know, about the Christianity, the history, or the history of the Jesus, and the history of the disciples, about the Byzantine Empire, about the Crusaders? Why we don't learn about them? So we need that the education ministry change the historic learning and give the possibility that the Christian can learn about their Christianity and not learning about the Arabic and the Muslim. So, you know, when I was in the school, in 93, I did an exam, and in the exam, you know what it's saying? That the Muslims' occupation, I call them the Muslim and the Arabic occupation, they help us or stand with the Christian here against the Byzantine and against the Crusaders, because the Crusaders and the Byzantine were killing Christian who's speaking Arabic. It's a bullshit. It's not true. Now I'm knowing it's now I know that it's not true. So when you ask a youth, or teenagers, Christian teenagers, he understand that the Arabic and the Muhammad and the Prophet Muhammad, he helped us as a Christian community. So the second one, the Christian education, we want to learn about our history in the schools. We want to have an exam in the history of the Christianity exam. Maybe, I don't care, we can learn also about the Jewish history and also about the Arabic history. I have no problem with that. But first of all, let us learn about our Christianity history. So the second one, you understand it's true, that it's needed. The third one, when the Christian teenagers want to join to the army, we don't have any direction, or somebody or advisor can help the Christian who want to volunteer to the army, to help him and support him to go to the units. Where is it the unit he want to go? So now, in the army, who in charge of the Christian teenagers who want to be enlisted to the army, it's a Bedouins. Why is a Bedouin? Why you don't give us a Christian somebody, a Christian advisor, Christian officer, to be in charge on those on the Christian who joined or enlisted to the army? So I will answer the question why that. Because they're saying that there's no difference between Christian because you're Arabic. Now you understand when they say that we are Arabic, then they say to you that you don't have any difference if there's an advisor, a Bedouin or Muslims, to be in charge of our the Christian enlisted to the army. So this is the third one.
Really quickly, Ihab, just a quick question about Christians serving in the army. I'm just curious, what percentage of Christians, male or female, do serve because you don't have to, do choose to serve in the IDF? Do you know?
It's only 46% joining to the army, maybe 36% also. Because there's nobody support or helping the Christian teenagers who want to join to the army. Mm-hmm. When you go to the Jewish school, the Druze school, and the Bedouin school, the army go to the school and start explaining about the units, explaining about IDF. But the Christian, you know, in the army, I was now in the church. One parent came to me and said to me, Hab, I want my son to be in the border unit. I want him to go. What I can say to him? Call who? To call the Bedouin who in charge about the Christian? The Bedouin won't answer. So I'm asking here by this broadcast to the Israeli government and the Ministry of Defense, we need somebody, advisor, to be in charge about the enlisted of the Christian community to the army as the same as the other minority, and also about and also that same as the Orthodox Jewish, that there's somebody who in charge about them to join to the army. So don't ask me why the Christian are not a volunteer to the army by 90% or 8% when they don't have any director or somebody who in charge about them. And not only by the enlisting to the army, you know, after they're finished their duty, so they want to work. Where are the Christian community or the Christian teenagers who's finished his duty in the army and he want to work in Elbit, in Rafael, in every place? What they say to him? Ah, you are Arabic. So, you know, it's a circle that go back to our nationality when you call us Arabic. So now you understand the third one, that we need that somebody to be in charge of the recruitment of the Christian community in the army. The third one, memorial site for those Christian soldiers who died in their duty or in the army. We have now 27 Christian who died in the army in their duty. So when you ask why we don't have any memorial site, I'm saying to you now, the name of those soldiers who fall in their duty, their name is in the Bedouin memorial site.
So we lost you for a moment there. You're frozen. So we will hopefully he'll be able to jump back on. Wi-Fi issues, you gotta love them. So it is very interesting, and I have to be honest that as many times as I've been to Israel, as many friends as I have in Israel, this is information that I'm not aware of. And I think that like every country, we are not always going to be aware of minority issues the way that obviously the minorities are. One of the things with the IDF recruitment is the other groups that he was talking about, perhaps, and I'd like to ask him when he gets back on, the reason why they have recruitments is because those other groups have mandatory conscription. With the exception of the Orthodox Jews, which he mentioned, though these days perhaps you've heard there's a big push to get more Orthodox Jews to join the army as well. I say army, I mean IDF. That's all of the forces. So right now, who serves and who doesn't serve in the army is a fairly complex issue. Perhaps you know that. So what's interesting about what he's saying is perhaps you know Muslims are absolutely not required to serve in the IDF. The IDF would never force a Muslim to join and potentially have to kill another Muslim, right? So if a Muslim decides to join, that is completely up to him or her. Perhaps because the Muslim community in Israel is 20% of Israel, and the Christian population is 2%. So that might be why they're added in, and also added in as Arab. And it looks like Ihab is trying to get back on, and there he is.
We are back. Sorry, it say to me that it's high temperature for the iPhone. I don't know why.
Oh,
maybe it's too hot here, but the air condition is working.
You may want to hold it when it's on the dashboard. I've had that happen to me. Just keeping it away from the heat of the windshield will help. We heard about the memorial site. We heard that that right now it's in the Bedouin area, and then you froze.
Memorial site for those Christian soldiers who died in the duty. And then I want to see a priest praying for those Christian who died, who was falling in the army. Still, the Ministry of Defense, we are just waiting. They say all the time, okay, we got a land. We have a land. But we are waiting for the decision to build the memorial site for those Christian soldiers who died. And the last one, is a proper representation for Christianity, for Christian in the Israeli Institute. I will give you an example. The advisor of the Christianity in the Jerusalem police officer, he's a Druze. How come advisor of the Christian churches in Jerusalem, he's not Christian? So the Jews, we need to learn about the Christian dimension, to learn about the Christian, to know what the meaning of bishops and priests. So when I send a message to the Ministry of for the police station, he said to me, Ihab, we don't have different from Christian and Jews and Druze. For us, is the same. What are you saying? Are you saying to me that in charge, the police who in charge in the mosque, they will be Christian? It's not true. So we need that the advisor of this, the word, what is called the police, a Christian advisor to the police in Jerusalem, need to be Christian. Let's go to the Foreign Ministry. To the Foreign Ministry, I sent a message, a letter last week, and I asked them that we need somebody, a Christian advisor in the Foreign Ministry, you know, to be with a relationship and a contact with the Vatican and the Christian world, because now who is in charge of that? He's a Druze. When I send the letter, what they say to me, Ihab, we don't have any different, and the Foreign Ministry, we don't see that we need somebody who's called a Christian. So what I'm telling us, tomorrow we will be an advisor, an Arabic advisor, who in charge of the peace process with the Arabic countries. You will see to me that we'll be a Christian or a Muslims. So don't say your health. Tell the truth. I am asking here also in this broadcast, in the Persian ministry, if you want us to be part of the Christianity here, and the Christian and the Jewish and the Israeli in Israeli state, please take an advisor, a Christian advisor in the Persian ministry.
Ihab, I want to get into some other topics more relating to your service, if that's okay. And I also have links to your organization in the description, where anybody can not only find you, but contact you and also donate to your cause, or perhaps get involved in some way. But we can also come back to that. But I do want to talk a bit about your IDF service, because I think that listening to your you have some valid grievances here that you're very, very passionate about. You never had to serve in the IDF, but you chose to. And you didn't just choose to. You also have volunteered now in the reserves during the latest war. So why did you decide to join the IDF?
So I'm asking myself, why I'm not going to the army? All my friends are going to the army, to the IDF. They, you know, they must go to the army. But me, I wanted to join to the army. So when I went to the IDF and asked them, I want to join to the army. They say to me, why you need that? Because you don't have to. I said, no, I want to protect our country. So for 25 years in the army, I was in every unit, from the north to the south, from the west to the east. I was also in the Navy, the Israeli Navy, and in the armored units. In every unit I was. So I cannot explain to talk about my rules, because, you know, it's a classified position. But I'm telling you that I help in IDF in every places that in the world. I did a perfect work rules, and I'm glad with that, because, you know, with the economy, still I'm in reserve, as you know. I'm still in reserve, and all the time I'm there. I'm going to my unit and supporting my, do whatever it's necessary to support our IDF and support the Israel country. So I cannot explain, I cannot talk about that, because I'm still in reserve, as you understand. But it is part of me. IDF now is part of me. The Israeli the Israeli country is part of me. So I will be in the army till my death, I'm telling you.
This question of, is criticism of the Israeli government anti-Semitic, or is it even anti-Israel? And the answer is no. You're a very proud Israeli, but there are some issues with your government. I'm a very proud American, but of course I have issues with my government. I live in Los Angeles. I take it out on X with Karen Bass, my mayor, every single day. But do I love Los Angeles? Yes, I love Los Angeles. So people have to understand the complexities of what it means to cross the line, because just saying Israel has some issues is neither anti-Semitic nor anti-Israel. In fact, show me the country that doesn't have issues, because I'll move there in a minute. But Ehab, I have a question. You said your kids go to Hebrew school or Jewish school, but you went to Christian school. Why were all your friends Jewish?
So I didn't want that my children will be in the schools that the majority are Muslims, not because I'm against the Muslims, just because I want my children to learn about Israel and to be part of Israel, to be, you know, to understand that the Jewish are our friend. Unfortunately, in the schools, in the Arabic school, because it's too much democracy, you know, the teachers can say bad word about Israel. They can say that we live in occupation and nobody says something. So this is the reason that I wanted my children to be in a Jewish school. I'm happy for this decision, because I see my children, my son, he's 16 years old, and say to me, Father, I want to join to the army. I want to fight. I want to be part of the my friend are going, you know, to doing exam to be first in the IDF. And he want to be part of them. So this is what I'm thinking now. I hope that the Israeli government will stop fighting right and left, fighting, you know, and wake up, because October 7, it started because this is the reason. So if they will keep the same fighting together against each other in the Jewish, you know, left and right, unfortunately, I think it will be also in the Arabic countries here, in the Arabic village and cities, and we'll see next October 7 from inside Israel if the Israeli government won't wake up. So I'm saying to them, wake up, please.
Prior to October 7th, it didn't take a genius to know that an invasion was going to happen, because Israel was showing tremendous disunity and weakness. Anybody, right? I mean, I said that 100 times before October 7th. Like, what are you guys doing? You're going to destroy yourself from within. You're doing the work of your enemies, and the enemies are always there. But my question actually was, that's wonderful about your children, but you went to a Christian school, you said. Why were all your friends Jewish?
So in back home, you know, all my neighbors are Jewish. They are all my friends. But, you know, but in the Christian schools, you didn't ask me, the Christian schools, why they are studying or learning Muslim historic or Arabic history, because also the Christian schools are under the Arabic pedagogy in the Ministry of the Education Ministry. The Education Ministry, they're saying to the schools and also to the Christian schools, if you don't learn or study this history, you won't get any payment or money. And they say the deputy of the manager is also Arabic in each school. So the deputy is all the time saying what happened in the school. So every manager in the school, they're afraid to say something against the Ministry of Education. It's as they say to you, too much democracy, it's too bad to minority, to the minority.
Right. Okay. So going back to the IDF and your service in the IDF, can you explain to the viewers what Ruach Sahal is?
Well, I didn't understand. What do you say? Because the connection is not okay.
It might be the connection or it might be my Hebrew. Can you?
You can tell Hebrew. You can say it in Hebrew. I will answer.
No, I did. No. So can you explain Ruach Sahal to the audience? What is it?
I didn't understand the question, really.
Okay. Ruach, spirit of Sahal, of the... Are you familiar with Ruach Sahal, or is this a Jewish thing?
No, really no.
Like a list of moral guidelines that the IDF follows. Okay, it might be more... religion. That's so odd. Okay, I'm going to have to look into that because from what I've been told by other soldiers is that some of them actually carry it on a laminated card. And it's basically just about Jewish values and morality in the IDF and in the values that need to be upheld.
This is what you're asking me, this one? It's Ruach Tzal? It's the IDF spirit? They have in this bucket, it's Ruach Tzal, it's IDF spirit. It's saying that, it's the Tikva. It's written there. And also all the value as a Christians, as a soldiers. Yes, I know that, yes. No, you have a bad Hebrew, let's say, because you say Ruach Tzal, I don't understand the word. It's Sahal. It's saying Hebrew. In Hebrew, it's saying Ruach Tzal.
Sahal. Okay, I'm not good with the emphases. Okay. Your camera is out again. It's not the end of the world, but hopefully your voice will at least align. So how would you say that, and again, like it's hard to even differentiate Jewish from Christian values, because again, we call them Judeo-Christian values because they're basically the same and they're basically founded on the Ten Commandments. But how would you say your Christian values align with the Jewish values of your fellow IDF service members?
It's Ruach Tzal. When they ask me the question, Ihab, when you see the Tikva, but the Tikva is talking about the Jewish only. You know, it's in 2000 years, that before 2000 years, I'm telling to the Christian here, listen to me, don't be an idiot. Because Jesus was a Jewish. When you say in the Ruach Tzal, when you say the Tikva about the Jewish, you recognize in your mind and you say in your mind that Jesus was a Jewish. We are part of this country. Then, for me, the Tikva, it's the best thing that I can say as a Christian here, as a Christian soldier, because now I understand that, in my mind, that Jesus was a Jewish. Jesus spoke Hebrew. Jesus believed in the Jewish people. Jesus came first of all for the Jewish people. This is for me Ruach Tzal. So when I am in the army and using the spirit of the IDF, I all the time see in my mind, first of all, we are believing in Jesus. Jesus was a Jewish. His mother was a Jewish. His grandfather, his grandfather was a rabbi. A rabbi Joachim. So I want every soldier, every Christian soldier to understand that, to understand the meaning of the Tikva and to understand the meaning of the Ruach Tzal, the spirit of IDF.
I have a question about Gaza And I believe from what I understand from what I've read about you, that you have had interactions with the Christian community in Gaza. I know that there's three churches there. Is that accurate? How much interaction have you had with the Christians in Gaza? And is that something ongoing? Like, is there a way to communicate them through social media or WhatsApp? Or are you in touch with this community? And what is your awareness of what's going on with the Gaza Christian community?
You know, when Hamas... Wait a second. When Israel took out from Gaza and gave it to the Palestinian Authority, what happened there? The Hamas and the Jihad Islami take control on all Gaza Strip. So what do you think, all my audience here, or all the viewers, what do you think when Hamas and Jihad Islami, that they believe in Salafic way, the majority of them, they believe in ISIS, what do you think happened to the Christian community there in the Gaza Strip? You know the answer. I don't need even to answer about this question. So the Christian community there, under the occupy of the Hamas and the Jihad Islami, they live a difficult life. You know, the Muslims, they cannot drink alcohol. So you cannot take alcohol inside the churches. The Muslims, I say the radical Muslims, you can dress up as you want. You need to put a hijab. So the Christian women need to put a hijab in Gaza Strip. So this is what happened to the Christian community when Hamas and the Jihad Islami take control in Gaza Strip. During the war, because I was in the IDF and all the time I was connection with the priest in the Holy Land, it's called the Holy Church in Gaza Strip, you know, they're afraid to take out of the church because they're saying to us that the Jihad Islami near the Holy Family, it's a holy family church. They say to us that the churches, under the churches, there was a missiles. The Jihad Islami, they built a tunnel down to the church, and there's a missiles next to the churches. So when the aircraft attacked the missiles, as you understand, also the churches was a little bit hidden, and the wall of the church was taken down. But what can we do? As you see now, Russia and Ukraine, they are attacking each other. So if you have missiles next to the building, that for sure you will be attacked them. So I tried all my best to take those Christians from the north and taking them to Egypt, from Egypt to Sweden and aboard. But the Egyptian, you know what the Egyptian, I have all the message. What I'm telling you, I have all what you need if you want to, you know, publish that. The Egyptians say everyone who want to go inside Egypt, they want $6,000. So I called the Patriarch, the Orthodox Patriarch and the Latin Patriarch, and say to them, look what the Egyptian need. Look what the Egyptian say they don't need. They say that if you don't pay $6,000 for each one, nobody will be go inside the Rafiah and from Rafiah aboard, Egypt aboard. So the Patriarch, the Latin Patriarch and the Orthodox Patriarch, they pay money for the Egyptian government, and we took Christian community from there. Maybe now we got 505 or 504 Christian in Gaza. That's it. And they are not out of them there because they're afraid to go down, you know, from the north to the south, because, you know, they say all the time we have a war, and they're afraid to go out. But if you ask all the Christian community in Gaza Strip, I can swear to you, if you ask every Christian there from whom they are suffering, they will say to you, they are suffering from the Jihad Islami and for Hamas. And they want to live in Israel. They're afraid to say that because you see what happened in Gaza, what they are doing. And you see now in Syria, what are those radical Muslims doing even to the Muslims. So how come they are doing to the Christians? So now we have also only 500 Christian in Gaza Strip, and all of them, they want to get out from there. They don't want to live there. But, you know, it's too bad because we have a great three anxious churches there, Orthodox churches. Yeah. But what can we do? The radical Muslims keep controlling in Gaza Strip, we can do nothing.
Agree. But this raises a lot of issues, actually. Like, the first one that people have to understand is that there's this weird conception that to try to get citizens out of a war zone is something that is not only unique, but uniquely bad about Israel. You have to understand that in every war in history, everywhere on earth, there are what are called refugees who leave the country. This is a normal thing. And yet the world is trying to vilify Israel for trying to accommodate the exit of innocent civilians from Gaza. As you've heard, Ihab is telling us that the Christian population is basically held captive, just like, honestly, all the people of Gaza by Hamas, that they are held under their rule and they want to get out. But I have a question, Ihab, is that you say, and I've heard this before, that you have to pay, you say 6,000, I've heard 10,000, but it doesn't matter. It's a lot of thousand dollars to get passage out of Gaza into Egypt. At the same time, what I've heard is over and over and over again is that Egypt does not want Gazans because they are a radicalized population that have always created havoc, honestly, whenever they've been let in. Is there a different entrance standard into Egypt? And this has nothing to do with Israel, but just into Egypt for Christians versus Muslims? Like, is it easier to get out, assuming you have the money? Is it easier to get out if you're a Christian than if you're a Muslim?
You know, in Egypt, if you give him, $2, he will give you everything. I think he will give you also his wife. So this is the Egyptian. What I'm telling you, the Egyptian, for them, give them money, they will give you everything. We know that in Sinai, all the Jewish, when they go to Sinai, you know, for vacation, you know, when you give them $10, for them, they will give you everything. So this is what happened. We just gave them money to take the Christian from there out. And this is the reality. If you go also, the Christian community, the Coptim in Egypt, they also suffer from the Muslim Brotherhood, as you know.
But if that's the situation, Trump, and I'll say Trump and Netanyahu, but let's just leave it at Trump in order to take Israeli politics out of this. Trump has asked Egypt specifically, and Jordan, and a bunch of other countries, but let's stick with Egypt for a second here, that he's asked them very, very specifically, while we rebuild Gaza, will you take in the Gaza population? Obviously, there would be huge financial incentives attached, and the answer was no, it was absolutely no. Do you think that this is an Egyptian effort to just make the rebuilding effort or whatever more difficult, or to really just say, like, no, we're just not going to cooperate with you? Or do you think it's because they don't want radicalized populations flooding into their country? Because if you're saying it's just a matter of money, because we all know that Egypt is in a dire financial crisis and has been for many years, that it seems like if America said, okay, we'll give you $1 billion, just take all the Gazans, that they would say yes, but they're still saying no.
You see, now the Egyptian government, they say them, okay, if we take in charge of the Gaza Strip, what will happen to us? I believe that the Egyptians are understanding that if they take over Gaza Strip and radical Muslims are still live in Gaza Strip, they will attack also the Egyptian. So why the Egyptian need the Palestinian? You know, there's a statement or somebody, some all the Arabs saying all the time, in every place the Palestinian go inside, they are troublemakers. You know, the Palestinian, when they was in Lebanon, the Lebanon suffered. When the Palestinian go inside the Jordan, the Jordan also suffers. Now we are here in the Israel, we are suffering from them. So, and the Egyptian, they are suffering from the Palestinian, what they did. you know, when you write in YouTube and Google and you ask them what the Palestinian did or what the Hamas did to the Egyptian soldiers, there was an attack. The the Hamas attacked also Egyptian soldiers. So he said to, you know, the Egyptian government, they have problem inside them. So what they want to take the Egyptian, what we take to the Gaza Strip, we don't need them. Why do we need another to take another problems? And you say now in the Gaza Strip, still there are terrorism. There are still radical Muslims. So what do you want? To rebuild all the Gaza another time? How many times we rebuild the Gaza? All the time you are giving them money. You rebuild the Gaza Strip. You give them food. What we get in for reward? What we get? Another muscles? Another tunnels? It seems that we don't have any solution for Gaza Strip. And the solution, I think, that the Arab countries, maybe the UN also, need to go inside Gaza and take all the weapon and all the time arresting those radical Muslims. But the problem here, it's like ideology. You know, now in London, as you see in London, their ideology, there's a lot of them are radical Muslims, are starting attacking Christians, start attacking people there because they're an ideology. I don't know what the cure for this cancer. It's a real problem. I don't know. I hope that the government, maybe also Trump, have a solution for them. If you don't put any army soldier there, you will still taking missiles from them. You will see tunnels under that. Let's go to the West Bank. The West Bank, because IDF is inside the villages, inside the cities, in the Palestinian Authority, so we can handle those terrorism. Still, all the time they are attacking, but not the same power as you see in Gaza Strip. So if you ask my idea, I think that IDF need to be inside Gaza for long time. This is the solution, I think. I don't have any another, idea what we can do there.
I think that most people agree. But my point was that you're saying that the Egyptians will allow Christians in for a certain amount of money. But at the same time, there seems to be no amount of money that would allow them to actually let the actual population of Gaza to come in as refugees en masse. But you touched upon London and of course now we've got New York very much in that same arena. So in the diaspora, many Jews feel like the rise of radical Islam poses like an existential threat to our very existence in the Western world, meaning like Europe, America, Australia. So I'm wondering, do you have similar fears for the future of Christianity? No, I'm not talking about Israel now. I'm talking about in the entire Western world, seeing what's going on with the rise of Islam in London, in Paris, in Sydney, in New York.
I think I said it in the last broadcast, and I'm telling you again, I think the next war, I hope so, but it will be. The next war will be in the West with those radical Muslims, and they will attacking Christian, and they will attack churches, and they attack also Jewish, and everybody who changed not the same as them. So I hope that the West will wake up and understand all the immigrate of those radical Muslims are a problem. Take those immigrate and tell them, go to your countries. Why Saudi, Arabic Saudi, they have a lot of money. Qatar, Dubai, they got a lot of money. Jordan, take those immigrants, put them there. They won't accept that because they know they are radical and they know they will attack them. So if we will keep that in this way and the countries of the West keep taking immigrants from the immigration from Syria and Iraq and I don't know from where, so the next war room there. 9/11, they will be in London. 9/11 will be in every place there if they don't wake up. I don't understand what Macron, in French, he don't understand that. All the time they're saying to me that Macron, the President Macron, all the time saying, no, we love them. We want to be part. You know, you are, your French world will be any more French.
Yeah. Absolutely. I want to just ask a couple, circling back around, a couple more questions about just Christian Zionism, and then we're going to wrap up. But I have a question just about, I don't know how I know you're very involved with the Christian communities of the Middle East. I'm not sure how much you're involved with the broader Christian community in the whole world, but both like within and in, especially outside of Israel, do you feel as if there is more or less Christian support for Israel and a desire to connect with the Holy Land and the Jewish people since 10/7?
So I'm telling you, first, I have a connection, a great connection with the Christian in the Middle East, because we have an Instagram. It's called Israeli Christian Instagram. And our, you know, and all the mailbooks or what, all the messages that we are getting from Christian from Iraq, Christian from Egypt, Christian from Syria, they're all the time saying to us, we love Israel. We want to be part of Israel. We afraid what happened to us in the Middle East. So I'm telling you, I'm in really a great relationship with the Christian communities in Syria. We are messaging together, and every day they are saying to us they are so afraid of what's happening to them, because they are seeing what happened to the Christian community here in Israel, that we live in safely, nobody being, you know, cut at his head, or churches were burning, or killing or kidnap girls, you know, only in the Arab countries there's a problem there. And all the immigrate to Christianity, they are from there, from the Middle East countries. And I'm also got a great relationship with the Kildanian Christian. I hope that you know who's a Kildanian Christian. There are Christians from Iraq who immigrate to U.S. and they have a great association. It's called Kildanian Association in U.S. And we all the time our connection together. And I hope that I will visit in U.S. In August or November, I will be there in the association, the Kildanian Association. So we are working together in my association as a Christian voice with the Kildanian Association and the Ashurian Association and the Aramaic Association together to support the Christian here in Israel, because they, all of them, they are seeing that the Christian community in Israel, they called us, we are the last line of the Christianity here. If the Christianity in Israel will disappear, there won't be any Christian anymore. So I'm so happy that I have a great relationship with them, and they want peace. They want peace with Israel. That's for sure, I'm telling you.
Do you have any like formal effort to try to get Christians of the Middle East into Israel?
It won't be happen, I'm telling you. I think that the Israeli government won't accept the idea to get any refugees from Arab countries. Unfortunately, I'm telling you, and as a in high position officer in the army, I don't believe it's a good idea to do it. Okay? It's not a good decision. I think that the Christian world and the Christian countries need to take action and to start taking Christian from those Arab countries, but not Israel. Israel. We have a lot of problem here inside. You know, we cannot handle this to do it. You know, you don't need to build houses and to give them villages and to protect them. And you don't know if everybody from them is okay. And we will start problem with the Arab countries. It's too hard to do it.
And do you feel like having Mike Huckabee as the U.S. ambassador to Israel, seeing as he is a very devout Christian, do you feel like that changes things at all for the Christian community in Israel?
Unfortunately, I didn't see nothing from them. I'm asking the ambassador, the U.S. ambassador, I want to meet him with all my clergy and my association to start talking about the Christian community here. But unfortunately, I don't see nothing, because I see their support for the Israeli government, to IDF, and to the Druze community. I'm telling you, they are supporting the Druze community. I like that. I'm happy with that. But I didn't hear any word from all the Christian association. Also, Kofi, Pastor Hagi, Christian United for Israel. He's supporting Israel. I like that. But, you know, I sent him a message. I sent him an email. I started talking, let's work together. Let's do together, you know, support us. And nobody answered. So how come, you know, the Christian here say to me, hey, how about we can do? All the Christian world, you know, they don't ask, they don't know about us. It's like a Christian community here in Israel. For them, we are disappeared.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the Christian advocacy for Israel is more biblically than like humanity focused. Meaning, I don't think that their concern is about the Christians in Israel, but rather than fulfilling a biblical prophecy. Does that make sense? I'm sorry about all these technological glitches. This happens a lot with YouTube Live, unfortunately. He's coming back on, and let's go ahead and try to finish off this show. It's been amazing to hear this. There he is with a picture and everything. This is what he looks like.
This any last one?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Okay, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. Before we do, Ihab, is there anything that you want to add about the future of Christianity in the Middle East, or anything that you would like to add before we wrap up?
World, please go back to Jesus. Start believing in Jesus. Start going to the churches. Start praying, because just this is the reason we are start losing our countries, because those are Christian in the Christian world. They are not going to the church on Sunday. They are not praying anymore. I think so. So this is the reason you are losing your land. Go back to Jesus. Believe in Jesus. Believe in Israel, also in Israel country. So you need to understand that the Christian and the Jewish need to be together. This is the only way that we can win the wars. I don't like to say the way the world war, but this is the only way that we can live here in democracy and live safely if just we are united as a Christian and Jewish together. And that's it. Thanks a lot.
I actually agree. I feel like a lot of the fraying of society these days is largely a function of a crisis of faith. And I think that as Jews, as Christians, the more that we return to literally like the word that we've been given, which is one of peace and loving thy neighbor, the more we come together, the more we can save not just Israel, not just Western civilization, but truly humanity. And I do want to say, Ihab, and to you and to all your fellow Christians in the IDF, the amount of appreciation that I have like cannot be put into words. I know you do not need to serve. And so my respect, kol hakavod, as they say, for you and for everybody in your community, for being a part of this community. Before we wrap up, one last question. What does Am Yisrael Chai mean to you?
We will win. Am Yisrael Chai.
We will win.
That's right. That's right. Am Yisrael Chai. We are together. Am Yisrael, it's not only the Jewish. It's all who believe in Israel. And who is the part with Israel, and we are together, will be Am Yisrael Chai. We will live here to the end.
Thank you so much. Ihab, thank you for coming back for this second and very special conversation. Despite the technical glitches, I think your message came through loud and clear. So thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.